Okay, we're starting here on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph by the two dots. Tanur Banan, Ezuhu Tzurat Dirakon. What exactly is this Dirakon that was mentioned in the Mishnah? We already tried to define it based on what the Rishonim said there. Here the Gemara gives the definition. This is really where the Rishonim piece it together, which is Perish Rabbi Shim ben Elazar, Kol she'esh lo tzitzin ben pirakav. Anything or image that has tzitzin ben pirakav between its joints, that's called a dirakon. Tzitzin, as Rashi notes, is the targum, the translation of fins. And that would be the reference over here. Although from the Rambam and the Perisha Mishnayot, it seems that possibly it was a reference to scales. The Rambam says, ha-dirakon surat ish. It is in the image of man. Baal snapirim, that has lots of fins. Because kasim rabim begabo ben snapirav. And he has scales between those fins. Kikas kasei hadagim. Like the scales of the dog. Bitsura azu haita mechubedet etzlam. This was a very important image for them. If yeshu mechasim ota, the chelek mechalgei agalgal. They assigned it to some sort of astrological significance. And one of the people who's involved, an astrologer in this business, he says, it's actually the serpent that makes the path for the moon to move through. So it creates the path or the tunnel which through which the moon moves all the time. So it's not clear here whether the Rambam sees the tzitzim as being the snapirim, the fins, or being the kaskasim, because he says the kaskasim are between the fins on the back of this animal, which has a tzurat adam. And the Rashi then does bring a second interpretation, which is that it refers to little hairs that are on the back. Machavi Rabbi Yossi ben Pirkei Tzavar. And Rabbi Yossi pointed out it has to be around the neck or the joint of the neck. So over here, again, when we discussed the Rakon, we said that it was either a snake or a serpent. And now if you add on to that picture, beyond just a snake and a serpent, that you have these sort of fins that are across the back of this animal, or they have fins by the neck of the animal, now you get a picture of something that has scaly skin, has fins on its back, fins on its neck. And again, it seems to be giving you a picture of something akin to a dragon. And as we noted before, that was the emblem of many of the Roman legions and was a very, very common image of what is Zerah in that time. And that seems to be what they are describing over here. Ke'am Rebbe Chama Rebbe Chanina, Halacha Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. Halacha follows the position of Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. Now, that's interesting because nobody argues on Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. So what does it mean? Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So you look in the Balei Tosafot, he brings from the Rashbam. Afilu imishkacha tana depolig. Even if you find somebody who argues on Rabbi Shimon Elazar, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He's trying to understand the context in which the halacha said. The Gemara is saying that what Rabbi Shimon Elazar says is so right that the halacha is like him, even if you find somebody who argues. Amar Rabbi Barchana, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Pamachat ha'iti mehalech achar Rabbi Elazar kapar. So here is a story where Rabbi Barchana says in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one telling the story, that he was walking behind Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, who's a Tano that lives up in the Golan. You go to the museum in Katsrin, you can see the stone that was above the Beit Midrasho shel Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. They actually have the stone that indicates that that was his shul, that was his Beit Midrash. So he was traveling, umatzasham tabat, and he finds a ring on the road, ba'aleha tzurat dirakon. And on it, it has an image of a dragon, umatza oved kochavim katan. And passing by was a young oved kochavim, a minor, v'lo amar lo klum. He didn't say a word to him. Matza oved kochavim gadol. Then he found an oved kochavim who was of age. Va'amar lo bitla. And he said to him, be mevatel this avodah zarah. V'lo bitla. And he refused. Such role. He smacked him across the face. U'bitla. And then he did what he was supposed to do. And he's mevatel the avodah zarah. Shma mina talat. From this you would conclude three things. Shma mina oved kochavim mevatel ovedat kochavim shelo v'shel chaveiro. The oved kochavim can not only annul the avodah zarah that he worships, he can even annul the avodah zarah that someone else worships. Because here he never queried of the oved kochavim as to whether he was a worshipper of the drakon. And you could argue it was just so universal or so common that people worship the drakon that he didn't have to ask him. But from the story, it seems like he was uninterested in what the Oved Kochavim worship. Simply needed an Oved Kochavim to mevatel it no matter what the Avodah Zarah was. Ushma mina yudea betiv shel Avodat Kochavim umishamsha mevatel. Only someone who has a semblance or an inkling of what Avodah Zarah is about can be mevatel it, and that's why he passed up on the Katan. He didn't ask the Katan to do it because the Katan is not a bardat with regards to this, and therefore he couldn't be mevatel the Avodah Zarah. Bishma mina And the third thing, Oved Kochavim Mevatel Baal Korcho. You can compel an Oved Avodah Zarah to be Mevatel it. He doesn't have to do it necessarily willingly. It can be done through your compelling him to do it. That's after he hit him. He did it. So here you see that it doesn't have to be a willing or of his own volition that he's Mevatel it. You can even compel him to be Mevatel it. So now, first of all, over here, as Rashi notes, he couldn't have picked up the Avodah Zarah here because he needed him to be Mevatel it before he picked it up. That we saw in yesterday's daf, which is that if you pick up something that's hefker, then you come into possession of it, and you can't be mevatel it because it's in the possession of Israel. So here we're dealing with, and we'll see in a second, an item that is out in a place where it would otherwise be hefker. It's a mitziah that you could keep because nobody would expect to get it back in this circumstance. And so he couldn't pick it up. He left it on the ground, and he's waiting with the ring, waiting on the ground to get someone to be mevatel it. The second thing is, the Baal Tosfos asks over here, why doesn't the Gemara conclude that a Yisrael cannot be mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a Goy? That does also come out of the story, because Rav Elazar Kapar does not mevatel it himself, rather he asks someone else to do it. So maybe you should also conclude that a Yisrael, Einu mevatel ovedat kochavim, shovei kochavim. Now, if you say that's a Mishnah in the subsequent Perek, so is the fact that an Oved Kochavim can mevatel another Oved Kochavim's Avodah Zarah. That's also in the subsequent Perek. The Baal Tosfot say, even in the Mishnah upcoming in the next Perek, which says that Israel cannot be mevatel the Avodah Zarah of an Oved Kochavim, the Gemara says about that line in the Mishnah, Pshita. That's so straightforward, that is so obvious, then why do you need even to write it in the Mishnah? Then the Gemara says it's to teach you that even if he is a shutaf and Oved Kochavim, he still cannot be mevatel it. So he says the fact that the Mishnah needs a chiddush to tell you why it even put it there means it's so pshita that you would not say over here that that's something that you discerned from this incident, because you would have known it even without the incident. And that's why the Gemara doesn't bring down such a conclusion or derivation out of this incident. Megadefa Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina, you could translate this loosely as he cursed, but we saw before that the Geonim have a Mesorah that it means to wipe off the plate, which means that he waved his hand. He was waving his hand as if he was dismissing what was being said. But lately, the Rabbi Elazar HaKapar Beribi Hadetnan, doesn't Rabbi Elazar HaKapar know the explicit Mishnah in Baba Metziah? A Matzil Min Ari, someone who saves an object from a lion, Umin Adova from a bear, Umin Namer, or from a tiger, or a panther, Umin Agayis, or from troops, or marauders, Umin Nahar, or from a river, Umizuto Shoyam. Rashi over here translates Zuto Shoyam as the receding tide. As the waters of the ocean move back into low tide, they pull everything back with it. That's how he describes Zuto Shel Yam. Umishaluto Shel Nar is when the river overflows, when the river goes over its banks and then sweeps things away. That, according to Rashi, is what we're speaking about here. If you look in Baba Metziah, the Rabbeinu Kanano seem to describe Zuto Shel Yam means the floor of the ocean, and it's the Shaluto Shel Nar means where the river runs fast, or the bed of the river. In both cases, it just means it's a place where no one expects to get the item back. Someone who finds it on an intercity road, or even on a major thoroughfare, any place where large numbers of people traverse, right away you can assume they're yours, because here we have an automatic assumed yeush, because nobody in their right mind would think that they're going to get this item back. And since they have no expectation to see this again, they have yeush, and therefore you can take it as if it is hefker. So the same thing over here. This ring that was dropped on a major thoroughfare, on a derech rabim, why don't we just assume there was yeush? And if there was yeush, that means that the Oved Kochavim had gave up any hope of getting it back. That means he also gave up hope of it being a Avodah Zarah anymore. So why don't we say that there's automatic bitul along with the yeush? So Abaye says that's no problem. He might be miyayish from ownership over the item. That does not necessarily mean that he is miyayish from the fact that it will be used as a Avodah Zarah. Because he makes the following assessment. Meimar amar, he would say to himself, Oved Kochavim meshkachla, if another Oved Kochavim finds it, miflach palachla, he'll end up worshipping it. Yisrael mishkachlo, if a Jew finds it, Aidi de Dameha Yikarim, since it's such an expensive item, or a premium item for a non-Jew to have this drakon, Mizavin Ladovid Kochavim, he'll sell it to a non-Jew, Upalachlo, and then the non-Jew will worship it. It's an interesting assessment of the situation because the Jew is actually restricted from doing such. The Jew knows that it is avodah zarah where he can't get hana from it, or he knows if he sells it to this individual, they're going to worship avodah zarah. You have a problem with lifnei iver lo titeh mikshol, which we saw in the first parak. And so the Jew is really precluded from selling this item. But nevertheless, in his mind, he believes that the Jew is going to profit from this because it's valuable. So either way, he thinks that the worship of this avodah zarah will continue in someone else's hands, but it will continue. And so therefore, he has yeush in terms of his ownership. He doesn't have yeush in terms of his belief that this avodah zarah will continue to be avodah zarah. And therefore, there's no automatic bittul of the avodah zarah. The Baalei HaTosafot over here ask two questions with regards to this question and answer of Abaye. The first of which is, why doesn't the Gemara just bring our Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Matzah Tavnit Yad V'Regel. If he finds a hand or a foot, we said that's problematic when it comes from a Tzelem, and that's deemed to be Avodah Zarah. Wait a minute. Why should it be a problem? It's out in the Rabim. It's out in a public thoroughfare. If it's a public thoroughfare, you see that there is no Yeush. You have to say, as the Mishnah is talking about a case where there isn't a lot of traffic, where not a lot of people traverse that area, and therefore you can't assume that it's like the Rabim. But had it been that it was like the Rabim, you would see that something remains of Avodah Zarah from our Mishnah. That would be a proof to what Rabbi Elazar HaKafar was doing. What the Baalei HaTosafot suggests is that the Mishnah is speaking about a case where there isn't a Rabim there. It's not such a big thoroughfare. On the other hand, the case here is an Ubda de Biribi Ktani Shayam Alech Baderach. It was on a thoroughfare, an intercity road, and it was something that had a lot of traffic. And there is a difference between this case and the case of our Mishnah. The second thing that the Baalei HaTosafot note is that if an Oved Avodah Zarah sells his god, or he sells his idol, or he gives it to the smelter or to the metal maker, the assumption is that he's automatically mevatel it. The fact that he's willing to sell it, the fact that he's willing to give it over to a craftsman means that he doesn't assign any significance to the item anymore. So now, why don't we say over there that dameha yikarim, that the item is so expensive that even when he sells it to someone else, his expectation is this person will resell it and not smelt it down or not reform it because it's worth more to them as it is right now. So why is it that over here we say dameha yikarim, and that gives us a reason to say that the avodah zarah remains avodah zarah, and we don't say that in the case further on in the Gemara? So the Baalei HaTosafot says something that we saw yesterday as well, which is Ve'yesh Lamar, the shiny hocha dika treis speke li isura. But over here you have a double safek that leads you to the isur. First of all, the possibility that a non-Jew will find it, and then there's a second possibility that a Jew will find it, and since it's expensive, he will resell it. So both options about who finds it, we assume, will continue the worship of the avodah zarah. Whereas in the case on the Gimel and Aleph, where when you sell it, we assume that there's automatic yeush over there. That's because there's only one thing to think over there. It's sold to a Jew. So you have to believe then that the Jew is going to then resell it because of its value rather than repurpose it because it is no longer avodah zarah. So over there you only have one safek l'isur. There's no oved avodah zarah there. There's no chance that a goy is picking up because you sold it to a Jew. So the Tosafot's been pointing this out a number of times, which is that we assume either the het or the isur, where you have multiple options that lead you in that direction. So yesterday we saw that with regards to the possibility that when something is mevutal, is because either an Oved Gubit Chamim found it and was mevatel it, or it was mevutal me'aleha, and then there's that small chance that a Jew finds it. But there, because there's both of those options that make it that you would have been mevutal, we assume that there is bittul. And similarly over here, we have two options that would keep it asur, there we assume that it remains asur. But you only have one option, for instance, in the case where the only option is that it was mevutal me'aleha, then we're not going to say that that's a strong enough safek to have there. And over here, again, if you have it that there's only one safek to say that it is, that it's the isur, which is that he's going to resell it to a goy because it's expensive, that's not going to make it asur. So in all these cases, the Baalei HaTosafot say that when speaking about sfekot, you have to have a very high percentage chance that this is going to happen to make either mutar or asur. If you're only dealing with a single safek, then we're not going to apply that safek and say, maybe that happened and then it should remain asur, or maybe that happened and it should be heter. And now the Gemara continues. Tanan Hotam. We have the Mishnah over there in Rosh Hashanah that describes the Mut Surot Levanot Ayalo the Rabbi Gamliel Ba'aliyato B'Tavla B'Kotel. Up in the Beit Midrash or in the courtroom of Rabban Gamliel, he used to have pictures of the moon that were hung up on the wall. Shebehen Mar'eh et Hedjutot. There he shows it to the lay people who are coming to testify about the Kiddush HaChodesh. Bomer Lehem Kazeritem Okezeritim. How did the moon look when you saw the new moon? So here are these people who are not so well versed in the astronomy and the way that the moon works. So they saw something in the sky. And Rav Gamliel wants to make sure that they saw the new moon and not the old moon at the close of the previous month, or not a cloud that was floating through the sky. So he shows them images to try to get them to say, yeah, that's what I saw. That's what I saw. Now, the moon has a different side of the moon that is lit when it's at the end of the month than when it's at the beginning of the month. It's also found in a different part of the sky. So given that information, he's able to determine whether they're telling the truth or whether they really saw the new moon. Omishori, how did he have images of the moon there? Vaktiv, doesn't the pasuk say in Shmot Perek Chaf, right after the Aseret Dibrot, Lo tasuniti Elohei Chesef veElohei Zahav Lo tasu lachem. We darshened yesterday, Lo tasuniti, Lo tasun kidmut shamashai hamishamshim lefanai. Don't make images that are similar to the constellations, the heavenly bodies that are in my service. Those that are in front of me, those that work with me, don't make images like them. So that means that the moon, the sun, the stars, those are things you can't make images of. How is it that he was able to make images of the moon? Why was that permissible? Amar Abaye, lo asra Torah el shamashin she'efshar lasot kemotan. So Abaye qualifies that and says, the restriction only applies to items which you could actually replicate. If you can't replicate the item, then it's not a problem. So the moon or the sun are items that you can't replicate. You can draw them, you can make models of them, what you can't do is really make a moon or really make a sun. So then what is restricted? Kedetanya, lo yase adam bayit tavnit eichal. Person should not make a house that looks like or is the dimensions of the eichal. Achsadra tavnit ulam. They should not make a gazebo the way that the ulam is presented. Chatzer, or a courtyard, tavnit azara, the same way the azara was in the Beit HaMikdash. Shulchan tavnit shulchan. Shouldn't make a table like the table of the Lechem Apanim, menorah tavnit menorah, or a candelabra that is similar to the menorah in the Mikdash. Aval, but you can do, who will say, shel hey, v'shel vav, v'shel chet. You make out of five branches, six branches, or eight branches, v'shel zayin lo yaseh, but you can't make it out of seven branches, lo yaseh, afilu shel shar minei matech chot. Even if it's a different metal, even if it's not made of gold, it is still problematic. Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af shel eitz lo yaseh, even out of wood, you may not make it. Kederach shasu beit chashmonai, because the chashmonim, when they were victorious over the Greeks, after the Greeks had plundered the Mikdash, defiled it, and taken everything away, they had to replace the menorah that was there. So the gold menorah is gone. They didn't have sufficient funds or the means to build another gold menorah. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda claims that they put a wooden menorah there in the interim. So that means that the wooden menorah would suffice for a menorah in the Mikdash. That means that you can't replicate it. Amru lo, the Chachamim said to him, Misham Raya, that you can't bring a proof from the Chashmonim. Shipudim shel barzel hayu. It wasn't made out of wood. It was actually made out of metal rods or metal spits. V'chupin bibatz. And they were plated with tin. Heshiru. Once they became wealthier, or in essence, there was a larger shift of population to living in Eretz Yisrael, and the kingdom of the Chashmonaim expanded greatly, then asum shel kesef. They upgraded the menorah to a silver menorah. Chazru v'heshiru. They became even more wealthy and had the means by which to upgrade again. Asam shel zahav. And they made it out of gold. So they returned it to its former glory after they had the ability to do so. So the first thing here we have is a machloke between Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Rabbanan as to whether you can have a menorah made out of wood. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda thinks it could be made out of wood. Chachamim think that you cannot make it out of wood. The machloke between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda as to whether wood is included in those things that we use for the Klei HaMikdash has to do with whether you darshan the psukim in a klal u'prat u'chlal, which would then eliminate the possibility of using wood because it's only metal, or whether you use riboy miut or riboy methodology of learning, where that would also include wood and would only exclude klei cheres. According to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to use earthenware utensils. Everything else could be used in the Mikdash, including wood. That is a nafkamina as to whether you can make a replica of the menorah in the Mikdash made out of wood. If you think it can be made out of wood, that would preclude you from doing such. If you think that it cannot be made out of wood, then you're not copying anything from the Mikdash, because it wouldn't be usable in the Mikdash if it was made out of wood. This is a machloket that we'll get to in Kodoshim, which is the question as to whether Klei Sharet can be made out of wood, or can they only be made out of matechet, made out of metal. The Tosfot Reed also points out over here that the reason that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda might have thought it was made out of wood, or someone, the Masor they got was made out of wood, is because when tin oxidizes, it starts to look like wood a little bit. So he claims that's what the confusion here is, as to whether it was just tin, or whether it was actually wood that the menorah was made out of. The second thing is that you may not copy the exact item that is done in the Mikdash, and Rashi makes that clear over here, which is that if you make any changes to the item, it's fine. So he says, when you make a bayit, a house, the shape of the heichal, says, bar quo, rachbo, veromo, and its length, its width, and its height, shi'ur midat p'tachav, and the doorways have to be the same, and the openings, and the windows, avam nishtane miktzat mutar. If you make any small change to it, that's not a problem. So the Gemara in the beginning of Baba Batra makes it sound like just replicating the measurements of the heichal or the ulam would be enough to be in violation of this isur. Over here, Rashi says you have to do more than just replicate the measurements. You have to make an exact replica in order to be in violation. And somewhat, you see that when the Braita described the issue of the menorah, it says as long as you add on another branch, that's fine. And that's actually most of the archaeological finds with regards to Batei Knesiot, especially up in the north, in the Galil, in the Golan. You see that they used to have images of the menorah there, but all the images of the menorah had a different number of branches than seven. Unusual or almost improbable to find a menorah that was drawn that had seven branches on it. It's interesting only because it doesn't sound like from the Gemara that that would be problematic. To make an image of the menorah would have been fine. It's only if you make the exact replica of the menorah that would have been usable in the Mikdash would be problematic. Nevertheless, we know that is the practice, that they did not draw menorot of seven branches in order not to copy that which was done in the Mikdash. The next thing to note is that Rashi says has to be exact. Over here, the Gemara says, achsadra, you make a gazebo. Achsadra in the Gemara generally means that three sides are closed in, and the fourth side is totally open. And it says, kitavnit ulam, similar to the way the ulam was structured. Now the truth is, the ulam, and most of you are familiar with the models of the Beit HaMikdash, looking at the ulam, or the front of the ulam, as well as the entrance to the Mishkan. Both of those have very large doorways, but they have wings on both sides. They're not a completely open fourth side. They're a side that has opening and then wings to the side of that that enclose it slightly. We just read this in the Parshat HaMishkan, that there are 15 amot on each side of the entranceway on the eastern side of the Chatzer HaMishkan. So it's not completely open on that side. So then why do they call it an achsadra? The Baal HaTosfot is supposed to say something that's amazing, because I don't understand how they got to this. Ulam haya parutz bimloal ruach mizrachit. The entire eastern side of the ulam was open. Now, it's true they had a large doorway there that was 20 amot wide, but that's not the whole ulam. You still have wings on the two sides of the ulam. Now, you could argue that the doorway is so big that if you push forward into the heichal, that doorway is the width of the entire remainder of the heichal, except for the front of the heichal, the front of the ulam, where there were those side areas. That doorway is as if it's open completely vis-a-vis the heichal. But then he says the same thing with regards to the Mishkan. Says, "Kamo petach haMishkan she'aparutz bimloa the ruach mizrachit." Just like the entrance way of the Mishkan was broken up and completely on the eastern side, v'karle petach, and it calls it a doorway in the pasuk. Well, that's just not true. The doorway had 20 amot across, but there were still 15 amot wings on each side. Unless again you say that when you're facing towards the Mishkan itself, the areas that were the kodesh and the kodesh kodeshim, the width of the doorway is the entire width of that structure, and that's why he's saying it. But it's an interesting Baalei HaTosafot, because it just seems not to be true. Others in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah where this is brought note that it means not exactly like an achsadra, but just because the doors were so wide or so open that it made it look like an achsadra. It gives the sensation of an achsadra, but not that it really was an achsadra. They acknowledge that there were wings on the side. Yeah, so my brother-in-law, when we were learning yesterday, asked me the same thing. He says, how do they make the menorah, the Temple Institute, that they have on display in Yerushalayim? So what I thought is that they made it for the Mikdash. They're not making it to have as a replica to use. They made it as menorah that it's intended to be used in the Mikdash. And I'm assuming that's the heter that they're relying on, is that it's not a replica. It's really a kli that they intend to use in the Beit HaMikdash. So as Rashi notes over here, you don't have to make it out of gold. It doesn't have to be made out of one piece. You can see that from the Chashmonaim that used spits to make the branches of the menorah. So you see from that, if it would be able to function b'diavad in the Mikdash, that would be problematic. So anything that's made, even if it has a semblance of the menorah, if it can be used in the Mikdash, that would be problematic if you're making it for your personal use. But seemingly, if you make it for the Mikdash itself, it should be fine. So the way Abai is teaching this is that these are the things that are asur because you can replicate them, but the sun, the moon would not be problematic. Mar says, V'shamashim, she'efshar lasot kemotam mishari. Is it really true that those items that you can't make or replicate is mutar? Vatanya. Lo tasuniti. Again, the same pasuk they're quoting. Lo tasun kidmut shamashai hamishamshim lefanai bimaro. So here, you can't give a bias answer because there's an added word in this praita, which is instead of saying hamishamshim lefanai, those that are in my service. Or you could have interpreted that to mean the mikdash, to mean the chatzer, to mean the ulam. Now it says lefanai b'maro. These are those that are in service to me in the heavens. Then you can't explain it the way Abaye did, and that's a pretty clear indication that you're not allowed to have the constellations or those items up above be replicated down below. Amar Abaye lo asra Torah ele b'dmut dalet panim b'hadei adodi. The only restriction here is to replicate that which is in service of God above, and that we know from the Maaseh Merkava in Yechezkel and in Yeshayahu that the dmuyot, those images that are above with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, are four faces that are together, which is the Pnei Shor, the Pnei Adam, the Pnei Aryeh, and the Pnei Nesher. Those four are the images of the Chayot and the Seraphim that are servicing Hashem. And so that you're not allowed to replicate, because those are the items that are together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So those are really in service of Hashem. Those are the things that are lifanai b'maro. They're up with me in the great heavens. That's what you can't replicate. And we saw yesterday that Rashi noted that the restriction that we had in the braita that was brought, that said, b'chol partzufim mutarim, all faces are mutar, with the exception of the face of a man. Rashi notes over there that even though the Shor, the Aryeh, and the Nesher are in service of God above, nevertheless, it's not a problem to make images of them as long as you don't make all four of them together. And Rashi got that from this qualification of Abaye over here, who says that the problem is only when you replicate exactly what is up in a heaven serving Hashem. So if you make a face of an eagle, the face of an ox, or the face of a lion, each one of them by themselves is not problematic. If all four of them together, then that is problematic. Mar says, Elamiato, if that's the case, Partsuf Adam Lichudei Tishtare, then a man's face alone should be fine. Alamatanya. We had the brayta that we brought yesterday that said, Kolar Partsufot Mutarim Chutz Mipartsuf Adam. All faces or all images of faces are fine with the exception of the face of a human being. Why should there be any problem with the face of a human being? It should only be problematic if it's four together, not when it's just the face of a human being. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Brei de Rabbi Yeshua. Over here, there's a little bit of a problem in the Girsa, because if you look yesterday when we quoted in the Gemara, over there brought that it was Rav Huna, Brei de Rabbi Yeshua. And if you look on the side here, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Masor Dashas points out, has the Girsa of Rav Huna, Brei de Rabbi Yehuda, Mipirkei de Abaye. Three different Girsaot as to who was the Bala Memra over here. We'll read what we have in the Gemara, but just note that there were two alternative Girsaot over here. I'm going to read Brei de Rabbi Yeshua, Mipirkei de Rabbi Yeshua, Shmieli. I heard in the Shir of Rabbi Yeshua, Lo tasun iti. What does that mean? Lo tasun oti. Do not replicate me. Aval shar shamashim shari. But any other image in the service of God is mutar. So now again, here we explained this yesterday, that what it means, Lo tasun oti, don't read it as iti, but oti. Oti means that we are created b'tzelem elukim. We are made in the image of God. And so what it means, don't make an image like me, means don't make the image of man. Don't make the face of man. The Valei Tosafot in the previous Amud asks, why is it that you need to restrict the image of man when it says that you're not allowed to replicate that which is servicing God above? The Vadai Leka Lamala Shum Malach V'Saraf V'Ufan U'Kruv K'dmut Adam Mamash. There's nothing up there in service of God that has the exact same image of man. And that's why you need a separate restriction or a separate isur to say you may not make the image of man, separate from the fact that you're not allowed to replicate that which is servicing God above. But then he also asks, why do you need the restriction against the four panim? Just say that the image of man is there, and then you're in violation of the restriction. If you say that man's image is problematic, then why do you need to say that the four images together are problematic? Because one of those images is the image of man. So he says, V'yesh lomar, that in a case where you already found the man's face there, and then you add in the other three images, that'll make you chayav. Because you're not chayav for the man's image, face of the man, because it was there already. The adding of the other additional three images will make you chayav. Inami lavor bishnei lavin. Or the possibility that now you're in violation of two restrictions. When you make all four images, you're in violation of the restriction to make man's face, and also in violation of the restriction to have all four of the chayot together. And then he brings down, at the end of that Balei Tosafot, V'chein halacha. This is the halacha. The partzuf adam asur lachtom v'asur la'asut. One may not engrave with a signet the face of an individual, basur lasot, and it's also restricted in making the face of an individual. Umiu, otam tsurot, adam, shetzovim besadinim, bitzvaim. Those images or faces that you have that are dyed or colored into the sheets, v'chein berikma, or they are weaved or sewn, mutarim, kemin shalem patsuf shalem, because they are not a frontal face image, they are a profile of the individual. So here the Baal Tosafot will give you one dispensation, which is if you have a profile, that is not problematic. It's only when you have the whole face that is there that it is problematic. And he says that the Partsuf Adam, you cannot be chutaim, and you cannot make such an item. But again, here it seems to indicate that if you just drew the face, that would be fine. It's only if you have an actual 3D image of the face, which is through a chotam, or through asiya, actually making it. That seems to be the problem, but not something that is a flat image, even though he mentions about the sadinim, which seemed to indicate that it was dyed or it was colored sadinim. That image seems to be that it was flat over there. He's only matir that when it's a profile, not when it's a full face. Alright, so now we have the drasha. Instead of saying lotasuniti, latasunoti, which means that only thing that's restricted is the face of man, but nothing else. And the Gemara says, Mishar Sharashim Mishari, since when are the remainder of those that are in service of God mutarim? Vahatanya, don't we have a bright lotasuniti, lotasun kidmut shamashai, hamishamshim lefanai b'marom? We have that drasha as well. You have the drasha of lotasunoti, we also have the drasha of lotasuniti. And so that means that not only is it restricted that you make the image of man, there's also restriction against replicating those that are in service for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kugon, Ofanim, Bisarafim, Bechayot HaKodesh, Umalachei Asheret. I'm not going to translate any of these items. You can look in the beginning of Yechezkel to see that they're mentioned in Maaseh Merkava, exactly what these items are, but they're all part of the Merkava that is in support of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Abaye, lo asra Torah, ela shamashim shemedor elyon. So Abaye again qualifies this restriction. It says that only restricts items that are found in the upper heavens. Shemedor atachton are not restricted. And the difference being those that are up in the heavenly spheres, in the spiritual heavenly spheres, those are restricted. Those that are found in the heavens that we look up to, the sun, the moon, and the stars, those would be fine. So here I have another qualification of Abaye to say why it was okay for Rabban Gamliel to have these items. It's interesting, in the Baal Tosafot, if you look up top, the first Baal Tosafot, he says, Omeri, the kol elu, terutzim shel Abaye met heim. All the answers that Abaye gives over here are true. Because in each of these instances, the Gemara doesn't say Ella. Ella would indicate that the Gemara is rejecting the previous statement of Abaye, or the qualification of Abaye, and then moving on to another answer. That's not what the Gemara does. In every case, the Gemara just continues to ask and then have answers, and Abaye qualifies them. What the Baal Tosafot say from that is that everything that Abaye is saying is true. And that means all the qualifications of Abaye along the way are actually correct and lahalacha. And so each time he says something that narrows the scope of the restriction, we're going to accept that narrowing of the scope of the restriction. The problem is that we're finding more restrictions that he seemed to expand it. But each time Abaye narrows that scope, over here the Gemara asks again, Osha medor tachton mishari, those that are found in the lower heavens, meaning the sun, the moon, and the stars, mishari, is that really mutar? V'hatanya, don't have a brayta, asher b'shamayim, they're both chama, levana, ulevana, kochavim, mazalot. So here, the Gemara is referencing to the pasuk that's actually found in the Aseret Adibrot itself, which is, lo taselecha pesel, v'chol t'munah asher b'shamayim mima'al, asher b'aretz mitachat, asher b'mayim mitachat la'aretz. So there, you have a restriction, even what seems to be in the heavens. And here, that's what the Gemara says. The interpretation of that word, the brayta says, asher b'shamayim, those that are found in the heavens, rabot chama levana kochavim u'mazalot. That comes to include the sun, the moon, the stars, and all the constellations, mima'al, rabot malachei asheret. That includes the angels. Mima'al means even above the heavens in the Mador Elyon. Kitanya hi, the uvdam, that brayta is about worshipping them. Il uvdam, afilu shushul katanami. If it's talking about worshipping them, then even a small snail or a small worm is problematic. Eino chanami. That's right. That's exactly what it is. Umisefet dorka nafka. And that's learned out of the latter part of the pasuk, the Tanya. Asher ba'aretz, that which is found on the land, rabot, yamim v'narot, harim ugvaot, comes to include all of these items that one may not worship. The seas, the rivers, the mountains, and the high places. whether that means actually these items or the sire of these items, as we saw yesterday that Rashi interpreted, mitachat rabot shel shul katan, that is beneath the ground, that it comes to include a worm or a small snail. So there, the Gemara makes a distinction, which I had actually noted yesterday as well, which is that all these psukim that we're speaking about here are psukim that you're not allowed to make these items, irrespective of whether you're making them for avodah zarah or not. So the Gemara is not interested. Are you making this for avodah zarah? Not making avodah zarah? The problem is making the image, period. And here the Gemara is now quoting a pasuk that is not about making an image, but about making avodah zarah. That's the distinction the Gemara makes. That restriction is against making these items when their intent is for avodah zarah. On the other hand, if you're making the items just to utilize them or have pictures of them, that isn't the problem, because you have nothing that seems to restrict the sun, the moon, and the stars be restricted with regards to making them, but rather the only restriction is with regards to making them in order to worship them. And that's the pasuk that's found in the Aseret Dibrot, as opposed to the pasuk that we're quoting, which seems to be a much harder pasuk to use. Why didn't the Gemara just use that pasuk all along? The answer is that the pasuk in the Aseret Dibrot is referring to making them for avodah zarah. The pasuk right after the Aseret Dibrot says, "Lo tasu nitei Elohei chesed v'lohei zahav lo tasu lechem." That's a reference that you may not make them, period. Forgetting about whether you make them for a god or not, pasuk split in half, which is "Lo tasu nitei et nachto." That's the end of the first part of the pasuk. The second half of the pasuk is "Elohei chesed v'lohei zahav lo tasu lechem." So the second half of the pasuk is dealing with making them for avodah zarah. That's why the Gemara interprets the first half of the pasuk as being, you cannot make them in general. And now we've interpreted, iti means with me, oti means of me. And so these are the images that are restricted, irrespective of whether they're made for avodah zarah or not. So far we haven't found a reason to restrict that which Rabbi Gamliel did about making the images of the moon, because Abaye in each of the cases has qualified it in a way that it does not aser the moon. Now the Gemara says, v'hatanya. Lo tasun iti, lo tasun kidmut shamashai hamishamshim lefanai be'marom. So again, it's similar to the bright that we quoted before, and Abaye qualified that to say it meant the Mador Elyon, the upper spheres, the heavenly spheres, but not about the sun, moon, and the stars. But here you have a little problem, because the bright explicitly says what it means lefanai be'marom, kigon chama ulevana kochavim umazalot. So here it makes it clear that those are subsumed under this restriction of lo tasun iti, that the sun, the moon, the stars are problematic. So then how did Rabbi Gamliel have these images of the moon? It says, shiny Rabbi Gamliel, da'achemi masulo. Rabbi Gamliel is different because other people made them for him. The restriction is lo tasun iti. You may not make them, but if someone else makes it for you, that is fine. Vaha Rabbi Yehuda, da'achemi masulo. Wait a minute, don't we have the case by Rabbi Yehuda where someone else made it? But nevertheless, Varmalei Shmuel, the Rabbi Yehuda, and Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinana, Same Enei Dedain, wipe out or ruin the eyes of this image. So Rabbi Yehuda here found an object that had some sort of image of an individual on it, and despite the fact that someone else made it, he still was required to wipe out the face or do something to ruin the image of the face. Now Rashi says over here that he found a Tzurah B'Tabat, She'yameniach. He had a image on a ring that he was wearing. Shmuel sees the ring on Rabbi Yehuda and says, you got to wipe out that face. You can't leave that face as it is. And as Rabbeinu Chananel says over here, Slami Enei Dedain Klomar Havar Tzurato, remove the image. Seems to be from Rabbeinu Chananel, you have to damage or ruin the image in some way. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to take out the eyes. It's that the eyes are considered to be a significant part of the face, and therefore it would ruin it if you took out the eyes. So it made some sort of damage or ruining of the image. There, Rabbi Yehuda didn't make the ring. He found the ring, or someone else made the ring. And yet, Shmuel is saying to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinana. And again, you can see here in the Masoret HaShas, he points to all the different places in Shas where the word Shinana is used, and the different ways that Rashi interprets it in these different locations, whether it means the sharp one, which is a compliment, or Shinana was a description of a feature that he had long teeth. So whether it's complimentary or it's just descriptive in nature, that's how Shmuel addresses Rabbi Yehuda. But he says to him, you gotta wipe out the image. Gemara says, Hatam b'chutamo b'leit. That's because the image was sticking out. It was 3D. Umishum chashto. And there the problem was chashad. So it wasn't because he had to wipe out the image. Someone else made it. It was fine. The chashad is that people might think he's worshipping the image because he has this 3D image on his ring. The Tanya, we have a brayta that says that a 3D image is problematic. Tabat shchutma b'leit. If you have a ring where the image protrudes outward, asur lahanicha. You cannot wear that ring, umutar lachtomba, but you can use it as a signet to seal things, because when you do that, it creates a depression. So the ring's problematic because the image is popping out of the ring, 3D, and since it is bolet, it sticks out or protrudes from the ring, that's problematic, but On the other side, if you use it as a stamp, that's fine because the image it creates in the wax when you stamp it is a depressed image. And the Rabbeinu Hananel qualifies this restriction against wearing it. It says, Asur lahanicha be'etzba'o. You can't wear it on your finger, which implies that you're allowed to keep such an item. You just can't wear it on your finger because of the fact that there's chashat. There's a problem of chashat here that people will think you're worshipping it. As long as you don't display it or wear it in a way that is obvious to the public, then you can own it. There are other Rishonim who read this restriction as meaning that you can't own it. So that nicha means that you can't have it at all. And you have to rid yourself of this item because it's a problem of chashat. Shokeya, on the other hand, if you have a signet that has an imprint or an image that is sunken into the ring, mutar la'anicha, you can wear that ring, basur la'achtomba, but you can't use it as a sealer or as a signet to seal items because then it'll create a 3D image that is bolet, that extends out of the wax. Gemara says, "Umi chashinan lechashto." Do we worry about people thinking you might be worshiping avodah zarah? Vabek nishto the shaf v'yotiv b'narda. The shul in Narda that was called shaf v'yotiv. Rashi over here brings the explanation that he notes in a number of places in Shas, which is that it was a shul that they brought the earth, the stones, and the materials to build it from Eretz Yisrael. And so shaf means to move or to shake out a place. Yativ means to settle down, which is that they brought the raw materials from Yerushalayim when they were sent into Galut, where they dismantled the shul there, or they just took the materials with them, and then they settled it down in Narda, and they built the shul in Narda, out of the materials from Eretz Yisrael, and that is based on the pasuk Kiratzu Avadecha et Avaneha, that pasuk which the Gemara Dene Ketubot quotes for the practice of the Amoraim coming to Eretz Yisrael and kissing the stones or kissing the earth, because Kiratzu Avadecha et Avaneha. Here it's a very different interpretation, saying that the materials that are brought from Eretz Yisrael were now made into a shul in Chutz Laaretz, so that it's being used in that way. And we have other stories in the Gemara that indicate that the Shekhinah was Shorah Shama. The presence of the Shekhinah was there. This was in Beit Knesset of antiquities and was a famous as well as well-attended Beit Knesset. Dukme Bey Andarto. They had a statue in the shul. Can you imagine that? I can't believe that would go over today. But in the meantime, in the main shul in Narda that was brought in the time of Galut Yechaniya, they had a big statue. V'havu Eili Bey Avua D'Shmo V'Levi U'matzla B'Gavei. And Avuah d'Shmuel, Levi, who are big guns, Matzal b'Gavei daven there, v'lo chayish l'chashto. They don't worry about somebody thinking they're davening to the statue that they're worshipping Avodah Zarah. For answers, Rabim Shaini. That's very different when you're dealing with the public at large. When everybody's there and everybody's davening together, there's no chashash that they're doing Avodah Zarah. Chashad exists when it's an individual who is differentiated or doing something different than the tzibor. That's where you have a problem. Rabban Gamliel, the yachid hava. If Gamliel was a yachid, so why isn't he problematic? Came in nasi, since he is the nasi, shchichi rabim gabe. The public at large comes to him. He sees a lot of people. A lot of people are visiting him all the time. And therefore he says, if he is the rabim, because he's really never alone, or he's not a person that really has so much privacy. Vibay teima, diprakim hab. Some say that the images of the moon were made out of pieces, and that he reassembled or disassembled the pieces when he needed them, so that wasn't a permanent image that was problematic, and so there's no chashad over there. B'Yidema, Litla made shiny. The other possibility is that when you do it to teach and to learn, that is fine, and that is quoted by the Gemara in Sanhedrin with regards to sorcery and those types of items that you're not allowed to practice them, but you can learn them to catch those people that are doing it or to understand how they do it. The Tanya, right? It says, "Lotomad lasot." You may not learn in order to do, "Valatalamed lahavinu lahorot." But you can learn or you can do this to understand or get a deeper understanding of what it is. And so too over here, you can't make the images in order to have them as images, but you can make the images in order to teach, in order to learn. And over here, you have the images of the moon in order to facilitate the ability of Edim to testify about Kiddush Achodesh. So here, this lines up for you, basically, structurally, what are the problems with these images and where they come up. And the Baalei Tosfot have a number of questions over here, which are important questions that also help us to understand the application. The first question the Baalei Tosfot ask is, how is it that when someone else makes it, it's okay? The Gemara suggested that Rabbi Gamliel had someone else who made it, and that's what made it okay. And he asked the question, Hiksha Rabbeinu Achanan, Lachora Mashma Shetziva Gamliel Lavekuch Vim Lasot, instructed a non-Jew to make these moon images. Va'amir la'akum shvut. Telling a goy to do something on your behalf is a shvut, and that is not limited to Shabbat. You're not allowed to tell a goy to go muzzle your animal and then go plow with it. That is called Amir la'akum. So why over here is Amir la'akum? He becomes your shaliach. he becomes basically your proxy in doing the wrong thing. Why is that okay over here? Is v'yesh lomar the mitzvah shiny? When you're doing it for the point of a mitzvah, it's different. We have that dispensation by Shabbat as well, that many times the mir lahakum is asur, but b'makom tzorech rabim, or b'makom mitzvah, sometimes we allow amir la'akum in those situations. That also does assume that it's not restricted for a goy to make them. The only restriction for a goy is to worship them. And that's why it would be mutar to have a goy do it. Otherwise, you have a problem. So the restriction for a Jew is to make them. For a goy, it's to worship them. V'yesh sh'ayu rotzim lachmir. Based on our Gemara, there are those that wanted to be machmir. Sh'lo lachtim ovei kochavim chutam. That you should not ask a non-Jew to come and put his seal on a debt document, unless he did it of his own volition. You can't ask him to come bring the seal and sign on the document or give his seal to the document. What you have to do is allow him to do it of his own volition. And that is based on this idea that there is a concept of amir la'akum over here. And when it's not a mitzvah, then you don't have a right to ask him to make an image. Because when he puts his stamp on the wax or on the document, it's going to leave a 3D image there. So you can't ask him to do it. If he does it of his own volition, we said over here, if the goy does it, it's fine. And then you have it. That's okay. The problem is when you ask him to do it. He says some people were machmir from that. And they wouldn't wear these belts that have images of man that stick out. Amnam, yesh smach latir. There is a kula that we could bring up here in order to be matir. Mitoch halachot gedolot, out of the Bahag. Shemid otad Rav Yehuda bitzurat rakon. He explains that the case here with the ring and Rav Yehuda is not about an image of man, but an image of a drakon. V'sham shayach hashta tfei mibachrine. And there's a particular problem of hashta, because it was such a prevalent Avodah Zarah. Again, as we noted, it was the symbol of many of the Roman legions, that means that it was so pervasive that you have to have chashad. If he has a ring with a drakon on it, people are going to have chashad about Rabbi Yehuda wearing a ring with a drakon on it, when the drakon is a main symbol or a major symbol of Avodah Zarah. But if it was a symbol of an individual or a man, that would not be problematic. V'andarte, what about the statue, the kachayish lechashto, that they worried about, people worrying about Avodah Zarah? Hayinu mishum she'atzelem d'mut adam kol gufo b'yadayim v'raglayim. That's only true when it's the whole body of the individual. But if you just have the face of the individual, even if it's belayed, maybe that's not a problem. So over here, Balei Tosafot, being Malamed Zchut over here, suggests that we can narrow significantly the problem over here. Even here, when we say that it's an image of man is a problem, it's only a problem of chashad when there's a full statue of the individual. Even if you have a signet, a ring that has an image that pops out, or an image that's depressed that will make an image or give an impression that pops out, maybe those are not problematic when it's just the face of an individual. And the problem, our Gemara, is because it was a drakon, which is something that was heavily worshipped, and that's why there was chashad, but it would not have application broadly. So that's a big kula of the Balei Tosafot with regards to these items, including wearing a belt that has images of faces that are protruding out of it. Balei Tosafot are trying to be melamed zchut that maybe that's not problematic, even though he says that there were definitely people who are machmir for this issue. And that would mean then, according to the Bahag, the distinction between Balei and Shokeya is uniquely associated with images that are worshipped. And then you'd have that distinction. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot, who say that there are those that are machmir and only brings the Bahag as a side head there, clearly believe that when it comes to images of Avodah Zarah, they'd be asur whether they're bolet or they're shokeya. The problem that we're speaking about here is a regular image. Images that you're not allowed to make, there is a distinction between bolet and shokeya, but with regards to Avodah Zarah, we don't make such a distinction. Which means that by a ring that is shokeya and you make an image that protrudes, the problem there is that you're making an image that is asur. You're making an image of Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, if you think the whole problem is chashad and it has application even to items that are not normally worshipped or Avodah Zarah, then the problem, whether it's bolet or whether it's shokeya, creates an image that is bolet, those are problems of chashad and not a problem of making an image that is asur. Balei Tosafot then ask about these images of the moon that Rabbi Gamliel had. Why don't they just answer the Gemara that he didn't have 3D images? He just had images of the moon, not 3D images. We're saying over here that the problem with the image of the face is when it's bolet, when it protrudes outward, or it's a depressed image that creates an image that it protrudes, that's where you have a problem. So why didn't the Gemara answer that for Rabbi Gamliel? So based on that, Omer Ri, V'Rabbeinu Tam, V'Riva, Ki B'Chama, Levana u'Mizalot, Ein Chiluk Ben Botim L'Shokim. There is no difference as whether it's protruding or it's depressed. B'chein b'rakia, shokim heim. B'lo maflik b'hachi alagabi partzufim ukiyotzvhem. That distinction of protrusion versus depression is only distinction that's important when it comes to images of the face. It is not applicable when it comes to the constellations or any other items, and therefore that could not be a answer for Rabbi Gamliel that his moons, since they weren't a 3D protruding image, that's not a problem. Here the Baal Tosafot conclude, based on the fact that the Gemara does not give that answer, that it must be that when it comes to those items, it doesn't really matter. It's only with regards to faces that it matters whether it's boleit or not boleit. Alright, so now the last line of the Mishnah that we saw yesterday was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Mer, that these images are only problematic when they are mechubadim, when they're on an honorable or a item of stature or status, that's when it's problematic. But if they're mevuzim, if they're on something that's not so important, then it's not an issue. Ezein mechubadim, vezein mevuzim. What's considered to be something of status or stature versus something that is mevuzeh, that something that is not. Amarav. Mechubadim lamala minamayim, mevuzim lamata minamayim. So it depends where on the kli it is. It actually determines it is ben ognim. It depends where the ogen, where the handle of the kli is. If it's above the handle of the kli, then it's mechubad. If it's below the handle of the kli, then it is mevuzeh. Or in essence, what it's saying is the parts that are submerged in the water, or that get put in the water, those are not considered to be mechubad because they get faded and they're not always visible. But the things that are above the waterline or above the area where the kli is submerged into the water, those are considered to be mechubadim. Because first of all, they don't get washed off. And number two is they're always visible. So that's the team. If it's team mechubadim mevuzeh, according to Rav, Shmuel Amar, elu ve'elu mevuzim heim. When if it's on the kli, it's definitely mevuzeh. Ela elu heina mechubadim. What's considered to be mechubad? It's not where the image is on the kli, but rather what kli it is on. Now, mechubadim are she'al hashivin, that are on the bracelets, v'al nizamim, that are on the nose rings or earrings, v'al ha'taba'ot, and that are on rings. Those are considered to be jewelry. If you have an image on there, that is significant. But if it's just stam on a regular utensil, that's not considered avodah zarah. Tanya kavelti d'shmol, we have a brayta that supports Shmuel's contention. Mechubadim. How do you define mechubadim? She'al hashivin. The same examples of jewelry that he gave. Mevuzin, what's considered to be mevuzeh? Shalayorot, that are on the cauldrons. Ba'alakum kamsin, or on the smaller pots. Ba'al mechamei mayim, or on the kettles. Ba'al shasadinim, ba'al mitpechot, that are on the sheets, or that are on the towels. So now, if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he adds on here that it's not just on these items that are considered mevuzeh, but even the Rabbeinu Chananel right before the Mishnah says, Ve'ala matbeot, on coin, shmaimina, we hear from here, Kikol hatsurot hachakukot b'matbeot mevuzim hem b'sharu. They are considered to be an image that is not of stature, and therefore they are mutarim. Images on coins are not problematic. What he seems to note here, the difference in the list is a difference between things that are jewelry versus things that are for utility. And so a coin is not made for its jewelry purposes, but rather for its utility. And based on that, the matbeot would not be problematic, given Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's qualification. And you can see that in the Baal Tosafot as well. He quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel and he says, that sadinim valamit pachot, Rabbeinu Chananel gares matbeot. He is gores matbeot. Instead of mitpachot, it has matbeot. And he says that makes sense because mitpachot and sadinim are basically synonymous. And so why does he have to mention both of them? Hilkach mutarim matbeot sheish bem tzurat avodat kochavim. That means that coins that carry an image of avodah zarah on them are not problematic because they're not considered to be mechubadim. That means that people don't worship them. And since they are something of utility, you're able to use those coins, and it's no problem to use those coins. And that would be the justification in those days for using the coins of the Roman currency, which clearly had images of avodah zarah on them, as well as many of the other currencies that were available at the time. But it's not problematic because it's not done in a way that is mechubad, and people don't worship the coin. It might be in veneration or kavod towards the avodah zarah, or to remind them of it, but it's not worshipped, and therefore there's no iser hana'ah with regards to this item. Okay, we'll just finish up here with the Mishnah. This is a Mishnah that we quoted on yesterday's daf. Rabbi Yossi Omer, when you want to rid yourself of the Avodah Zarah, shochek, you pulverize it, v'zorel ruach, and then disperse it to the wind, o matil the yam, or you throw it into the ocean. Amru lo, so the Chachamim said to him, afu naseh zevel. If you do that, it's going to become fertilizer. It's going to become useful, not to that Jew, but maybe to another Jew who gets that water, or if they disperse dust, goes on their field, you're actually doing something that's beneficial, getting enough from it. Shenamar, and the pasuk says, "Lo yibak miyadcha meuma min acherim." You don't have to have any semblance or residual left of the avodah zarah, and that means anything whatsoever cannot be left over. And that is what the Bali Tosafot note over here is a difference between the disposal of chametz versus the disposal of avodah zarah. He says, "Gabe chametz k'tiv." By chametz it says, "Lo yachel." It uses a term of achila to teach you that there is an Isur Hana'ah. V'hilkach enu asur ela kederach hana'ah gmura. The restriction is only getting real type of Hana'ah and a normal type of Hana'ah. Aval barat kochavim te lo yidbak b'yadcha meuma min acherim v'afilu koldu. When it comes to avodah zarah, the restrictions against getting any Hana'ah whatsoever, whether it's derach Hana'ah, the normal way to get Hana'ah, whether it's not the normal way to get Hana'ah, that's the problem. And that makes the difference here between how you would dispose of chametz versus how you would dispose of avodah zarah. Over there, the Chachamim say that you can't be Zorel LaRuach. You can't throw it to the wind. Or you can't be Matil Yam. How come over there they don't worry about the problem we have here? That's the distinction that the Bali Tosafot just made, that there's a difference between avodah zarah and chametz. In addition, the Bali Tosafot note that the Gemara over there discusses whether when you matil the yam, what is the requirement of being matil the yam? Is matil the yam mean you can put it in any water body? Does matil the yam mean that you can only put it in yam hamelach? If you say that the meaning of yam over here means yam hamelach, he says then, according to the Chachamim, you're going to have a very difficult time disposing of avodah zarah. If you say that only when it's whole that you have to put it into yam hamelach, because yam hamelach is so pernicious that it wipes out even whole items, so you don't have to actually pulverize it first. You don't have to ruin it first and then put it in there. But you could put stuff that you pulverize in the regular ocean. That would work out well. But if you say to me that even when you pulverize it, you have to put it in Yam HaMelach, then you create a situation where, according to the Rabbanan here, where the only way to get rid of it is to basically put it in Yam HaMelach, that means that anybody has to get rid of avodah zarah is going to have to bring it to Yam HaMelach. And you can see in the Rabbeinu Chananel that he has some conclusion like that, which is, according to the Chachamim, Ela Yolichem the Yam HaMelach. Your only option to get rid of them is to actually take them to Yam HaMelach, according to the Chachamim. So the Bali Tosafot in the end say, even if you can't get the Yam HaMelach, you can't disperse it or you can throw it out in a place where it won't provide benefit. There's nothing growing there, or there's no water that's going to be affected by it. So again, yesterday we mentioned, if you throw it into the sea or the ocean, maybe over there it would be less problematic, because the salty water is not going to be used to fertilize anything. Therefore, if you disperse it over there, that would be fine. You can't put it into a sweet water body, or into a river, because that might be used by someone. But there are places that you could dispose of it that would qualify for the Chachamim that are not Yam HaMelach. In the end, the Bali Tosafot suggests that the machloket here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi is the following. Perish Reshbam, Kasarvi Zev Zeg Goreim Asur. When you have two items that cause something to happen, something that's mutar, and that's something that is asur, the Isur here is the crushed up avodah zarah, the destroyed avodah zarah. The mutar thing is the water, or whatever this other item is, the earth, where the item's growing from. Zev Zeg Goreim Asur. That's why the Chachamim say it's problematic. Rabbi Yossi Lo Chayish, the Savar Zev Zeg Goreim Mutar. Rabbi Yossi disagrees with them because he believes that when you have Zev Zeg Goreim, it is mutar. And even according to Rabbi Yossi, who believes Zev Zeg Goreim is mutar, that's only bidiavat. But the Chatchila, Rabbi Yossi would not allow you to go and fertilize the field with whatever you destroyed of the avodah zarah. That's only if it happened by chance that it's okay. But if you intend to do that, then you're clearly getting hana'ah from the avodah zarah, and it would be problematic even according to Rabbi Yossi. Bali Tosafot conclude, according to the Rashbam, that the machloket here is whether Zev Zeg Goreim is asur mutar. And then, based on that, he says that even Rabbi Yossi would agree if you intentionally use it as fertilizer, it would be problematic. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara at the end of Mem Gimel Amud Bet.